Well, that was about time that I was going to tell Doozy not to break, but he did anyway, because he's so excited to share the next story with you, as am I. It's about two local intrepid entrepreneurs who shared some digs together down at UCT, who've developed a world-first investment mechanism. It combines the power of crypto, or blockchain at least, as well as a very interesting tax-efficient investment structure that's been created over the last few years, the Section 12J company. And it's been backed by SARS, it's approved by the FSB, and it's called Aziza Coin. And I've got one of the co-founders, Sheikh, Motsalili, who's shaking things up a little bit. Sheikh, great to have you in studio.
No, great to be here, Michael.
Now, just as some background, you became the first black person in South Africa to pass the University of Pretoria's actuarial examinations. You became the head of the actuarial department at Momentum Life at the age of 34. Way to make an individual feel like they're fairly inadequate here, Shanks.
Michael, not quite accurate, but yeah. I did do quite well in my university years, and was one of two black people to be allowed to start their actuarial examination prematurely. And yes, I was head of actuarial and technical support at Momentum Wealth at about 35, yeah.
One of two people. Well, extremely humble and self-deprecating there, Sheikhs. Now, take me back to 2011. You co-founded Africa New Energies with Stephen Larkin, who was your former university flatmate. It has the rings of a Silicon Valley-esque startup, this. Just take me back to that relationship that took you from student digs into forming a business together.
Well, after we're together in varsity, Stephen actually left for the UK and became a British CA. I then went on a separate route and joined the corporate Momentum, to be exact. However, and we did lose touch for a bit. He called me up around a year before we actually started our business, and it was through the power of social media. You know, we actually communicated via Facebook after many years of being apart. And look, he started talking to me about, you know, energy and the challenges that 600 million Africans, you know, are without electricity, and the impact thereof to economic growth and to poverty, and how it is proven that if you do provide electricity, you create activity, etc., etc., and the betterment of lives. So we then, I said to him, look, but I don't know anything about energy. He said, look, Sheikhs, I trust you totally, and I know you very well, and I think you will be able to learn whatever we need to learn to go on this journey together. So, hence, you know, we decided to work together, and the rest is history. But Africa New Energy is basically, I was started because we had received a UN a UN grant to have a look at and study the possibility of using solar as a solution in Namibia to provide electricity to the Namibian people. We did the numbers, we came back to them, we said it was just too expensive. The capex required made it impossible. I mean, Namibia is the second most sparsely populated area on the planet. So, and most people are off the grid, and, you know, it just didn't make sense. So the Namibian government said to us, but guys, you're supposed to come with solutions. What can we do? You know. So we said, well, we're pretty confident you've got natural gas, conventional occurring natural gas. I have to mention we are into fracking as an organization.
Yeah.
And we said you could use that to create electricity, reinvest, sell that electricity, reinvest the profits to create a solar strategy. We call it the natural gas to solar strategy, and we wrote a paper about it. So the Namibian government then said, well, guys, help us find this natural gas. And that is how we ended up having a concession in Namibia, a hydrocarbon exploration concession, which is quite sizable, 22,000.
Solar from gas to liquid. Yeah. Pioneered, very innovative.
Yeah. So we currently have an asset of the size of 22,000 square kilometers. To give you an idea, that's bigger than the size of Gauteng. And we've been doing work there for the past 5 years or so. And it's looking good as far as we're concerned. Now, we pride ourselves in being innovative in our approach. So as you well know, with the drop in oil price, a lot of exploration programs have stopped dead in their tracks.
How much does it cost to sink a well? Give us an estimate of how costly this kind of exploration
exactly. In fact, I'll tell you what we did around 2011-12. We asked one of the leading experts in seismic technology to give us a breakdown and an idea of what he would do with a concession of our size, 22,000 Ks. And I'll mention Dr. Jan Bader. He's one of the leading experts on the globe. And he basically said, all right, he first used 2D seismic to just, obviously, all over the area to have, then obviously, whichever areas he liked, he would then use 3D seismic to look deeper. And then he would probably do a 4-well program. Right, his costing came to about $280 million.
Dollars,
yes, to do the program on our concession. Now, we are a junior mining company. We don't have access to those type of funds, without a doubt. So, but I think around the table, what you found, you had mathematicians and statisticians, and when we looked at first of all the traditional success of these type of programs, 2D, 3D seismic programs,
yeah,
it was staggering to find out that they had a traditional success rate of 26%. So after dropping $280 million, Dr. Ann Bader said you had a one in four chance to actually strike, you know.
And why it's so important to have the regulatory certainty that we don't have here in South Africa, with the uncertainty around the MPRDA and splitting oil and gas from our mining legislation.
Sure,
but let's
not diverge too
far.
I'm with you. So we then said, look, surely this can't be, you know. What can be done to change the odds, as it were? So we actually have come up with an innovative way to explore for gas and oil onshore, though, limited to onshore exploration. And we use, a lot of them are not new. They've been around but are a bit unpopular because, as an example, geochemical sampling has been around for decades and decades.
Yeah.
But it's unpopular because where you find the presence of methane or whatever hydrocarbons on the surface, if you drill there, it's almost guaranteed you're not going to find anything because gases tend to travel almost horizontally. But for us, it's important information because using mathematics, you can determine that there's an active hydrocarbon system within a particular radius, even if you use a 1% degree, you know, movement of the so at least, you know, we've taken different types of techniques, built an algorithm that takes all the data from these techniques and churns out a result. We actually use 27 layers of different data sets to come up with our results. I want to mention there as well one more thing. We also approach it quite differently. There's a lot of there's a lot of data that exists from wells that have been drilled, which have been dry wells.
Right.
But that's amazing
that's
information.
Still important
that's
data.
Important. So we've incorporated a lot of data that I think has been neglected in the past to actually come up with our unique, innovative way to look for gas and oil and so, increase our probability.
So now tell me, how do you go from mining or at least exploration for oil and gas to mining cryptocurrencies and using blockchain to offer this fantastic investment solution?
I will explain, and it's amazing. We first of all have an intention of helping the whole of Africa, you know, so we're driven by a need to solve some of the social injustices that we experience and live with, including poverty, etc. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things, and I'll mention quickly, is that there's an organization called the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor, which is the largest study of entrepreneurship on the globe.
The GEM study, very
yes.
well known.
Now, if you've gone through the GEMs, I don't know if you've had a show on it before, but just two, three stats. They obviously define two types of entrepreneurs, high expectation and necessity entrepreneurs. Now, of all entrepreneurs, high expectation entrepreneurs form only 10%. And the definition of a high expectation entrepreneur is someone who looks to employ 20 or more people in 5 years or so. Now, they also did a study on the top 2% of all entrepreneurs. So that's like, in my opinion, the creme de la creme.
Yeah.
These are like...
We like to call them the gazelles in South Africa.
Yeah, like the true... startups, tech startups that are coming with a very innovative idea to solve a true social problem. And Now, what is unfortunate is that, first of all, they have a high failure rate. Almost 9 out of 10 of these type of startups fail in the first 2 years. Number two, not even one was funded last year. However, the GEM study showed that these type of entrepreneurs in South Africa created 31% of all new jobs. Just a small subset. So it's a no-brainer that we've wanted to channel funds, private sector funds especially, to support these startups. But we had these set of circumstances to deal with. You know, the risk is just too high. So most people will not want to support these startups.
It's a handful of angel investors that even play in that space.
Yeah, it's really a handful. Okay. So what we've done is, on one hand, the government of South Africa has been very, very generous and I think understanding in support of startups by creating Section 12J legislation in the Income Tax Act, which basically covers some of the risk that you would be exposed to. To put it simply, it's linked to your marginal tax rate, whether you're a company or an individual. So if you simply put as an individual, I own a 40% marginal tax rate and you invest 100% into a Section 12J approved fund, the taxman covers 40 rand of that. So you, in essence, have risked only 60 rand for 100 rand worth of shares. That's one. But we said that's even still high. You know, if you think that the 60 rand, although you've got shares of 100, there's a 9 to 10% chance that this company will fail. Yeah. It still won't attract a lot of investors.
A 90% chance it will fail.
Exactly.
Yeah, a 10% chance it will succeed.
Yeah, so we said, now we took advantage of the cryptocurrency boom, which is something that we've been following. And there's been a lot of development in that space. And just to put it into perspective, to date, the last time I checked, the average of all cryptocurrencies was about 1,300% return. And this includes the ones that failed. You know? So there is...
I want for Christmas is one Bitcoin. Thank you.
So there is a cryptocurrency boom. So we then set about to create Aziza Coin. And the Aziza Coin is created to deal with the other 60%, to reduce the other 60% exposure. You know, so we basically, at this point in time, very important, we've not done our ICO, so we're not listed, so we're in a restricted trading phase.
Yeah.
And we restrict who actually can buy the coin, and the people that buy the coin do it with an agreement that they're going to invest the money they make in support of venture capital companies, these Section 12J entities, to in turn support entrepreneurial activity in South Africa.
Right.
We intend to list next year May. Then it will be similar to any other coin where it's buy and sell and people can speculate. Yeah. But in this closed phase, it's non-tradable in the open market, so it's not listed. But we do have a mechanism where we're driving the price with an algorithm and people can come in. It increases on a weekly basis. Now, depending on when you come in, the better it is.
And who chooses which companies are invested in? How does that process?
Beautiful question. Remember, VCCs are governed by Section 12J, and that has nothing to do with the coin. So the South African Revenue Services under Section 12J dictates how you operate. For instance, a VCC has to invest in minimum 5 companies. There's restrictions in terms of which sectors we can invest in. You cannot invest, for instance, in alcohol-related activity or munitions and things like that, you know. So what happens is, and to have a VCC status, you have to be licensed by the FSP. So you will have experience in actually handling people's funds and selecting companies to reinvest on their behalf, etc. So that is covered by the venture capital company.
It's a phenomenal story, Shakes. Unfortunately, we don't have much more time to chat about this. Obviously, you're in that closed phase before your initial coin offering. Who are you targeting? Who are you approaching now in your roadshow?
In our roadshow started small. We're not a big entity, and we are beginning with our networks. So we basically literally went across the country. We went to Port Elizabeth, East London, Durban, Cape Town, and Pretoria and Joburg. And we basically are trying to get the message out there. And if anything, if you want a coin that you want to buy in and sell and make a quick buck, this is not the opportunity for you. The type of investor we're looking for is someone who's going to look at the whole picture and the intention of our coin and what we want to achieve, and should be more medium to long-termist in outlook. Remember, you have to hold your shares in the VCC for at least 5 years, and this is one of the SARS rules. So in essence, that's the type of investor we're looking for.
It's looking for long-term capital. It's not looking for speculative trading type bets, but really, Sheikhs, I think a very innovative way to address a pressing social need, and that's improving that very shallow pool of venture capital money for entrepreneurs in the country.
One last thing there, Michael. Another important difference to mention with Aziza Coin is that we're building an asset-backed currency, in that the Aziza Coin, at the moment, what we did, the asset I mentioned initially, the Africa New Energies you talked about, we've transferred as 20% of Africa New Energies into Aziza Coin. So it is truly asset-backed. So although we've not drilled yet, we intend to drill third quarter next year. We earlier in the year received an unsolicited bid for $500 million of that asset. So it is
$6.5 billion.
Exactly. So it is this coin has got assets under it, and we intend to increase its portfolio of assets in the coming stages.
Sheikhs Motsalili, co-founder of Aziza Coin, was one of the more innovative investment propositions you're probably going to hear all year.